You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is good with you today. You're well. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not and it has to get done, it must get done, you will get it done. That's the kind of brother and sister that you is. That's why we have much love and respect for you. Keep getting it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Hit that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays and Wednesday, Monday tonight and Wednesday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Our Story with Baba West Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story with Baba West Johnson out of New Orleans on Monday and Wednesday, 7 to 9. On Thursday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursday. Friday, if it's 8 p.m. and it's Friday, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday. And at 7 p.m. on Sunday, it's time for an awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We have our guest, Brother Jomoke Ifunteyo. And we're going to get to him and what we're going to talk about. And he's been on the program a number of times. And I appreciate him. But we're gonna read the Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inyasasim. March 2nd. The melting pot is about to boil over. The devil's brew that they have seasoned with our dreams and our lives is about to spill out into the fires of justice. The fire that rages in the bosom of each one of us here. In Xavier Arnold. The need to include everybody in our war, especially those who boast about subsisting in the deepest states of menicide, who hate the idea that someone might think that somewhere in them there might be anything recognizable as African, is extremely problematic. If we have to get over anything is the idea that it is necessary to bring everybody into the fold in order to win. This is the diversity sham working its finest magic on the minds of those Africans seeking an easy way to peace. It is the idea that everyone of African descent must be brought into the decision-making fold because we think we are a domestic or a democratic people. It intentionally forces us to overlook the fact that there are those in our family who hate us. True. The diversity sham operates on the principle that you cannot make revolutionary progress without everyone included. It is so easy to become completely misdirected when believing that everyone must be together in order to return home. Affirm, alone or in the company of millions, I see victorious African future. I say, affirm,
alone or in the company of millions, I see a I see a victorious African future. March 3rd, the African man in his new cultural container imitates European men who basically dislike women. The Honorable Dr. Nana John Henry Clark. I'm sure most of us have met or know African people who show no evidence of African self anywhere. There was nothing in their walk, talk, voice, manner, associates, interests, style, loyalties, analysis, and especially eyes that spoke to their having an African center. In fact, everything about them point toward having an extreme European orientation. These individuals had so fully assimilated the European they loved and worshiped more than life itself, and they had literally lost themselves. They see no connection with the rest of us. They have no recognition of us as family. I imagine if they had their druthers, as most of the African characters in George Schuyler's book, Black No More, they would do anything, including selling their souls, to have a white exterior to match the emptiness inside. I say, affirm, Africa is everywhere evident in me. I say, Africa is everywhere in me. That's right. Sound like my brother Irv. Africa's born in me. Brothers and sisters, I have an honor to have as a guest brother who is with in COBRA, the National Coalition for the Blacks for Reparations in America, and other community and African-centered programs and ideas. That is Brother Jamoke. Brother Jamoke, good morning. Brother Jamoke, are you there?
Yes, I have self-muted myself.
Okay. I appreciate that.
I'm here. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much. Appreciate you, brother.
Yes. Thank you for that beautiful opening and the powerful libation that you did for grounding this conversation.
Well, thank you. Yes, it's an honor to have you on the program and talk about some of the things that you're involved in and what you got upcoming, you know. And so we're going to talk today about, and I know you always have been involved in reparation, but we may talk about that a little bit. But we're talking about the March, the Selma, Bloody Sunday. You know, this is the 60th anniversary. I was fortunate to go to the 50th anniversary 10 years ago. And it was interesting, brother. Believe me, it was very interesting. So what did you want to talk about specifically or just in general?
Yeah, so again, thanks for giving us the time to speak. And also, just in terms of identifier, I still am a member of NCOBRA, but I primarily now work with an organization called First Repair, which I consider the leading reparations organization in this time in the United States that's focusing on local and state in reparations initiatives, primarily does some work nationally as well.
Okay.
I also work with another organization. Mm-hmm. And so I'm the senior advisor to that organization, and I also serve as the South Region Coordinator. So we have, you know, regions of the country divided up, and we work to support the work of the local initiatives in the different regions. And so I'm also serving in the South Region. And then I also work with an organization called Reparations United, which is a and I should say First Repair was founded by Sister Robin Ruth Simmons. And again, we can unpack some of that later because I did want to talk, you know, start with mainly with Selma, but I just want, I think it's important, you know, people know my background properly.
Okay.
And so, yeah. And
yeah, we'll Robin definitely talk about that because you mentioned a number of organizations. First of all, I thought you were going to mention ADOS, and I was like, what?
No. No.
Right on.
No.
Okay.
What is it? Null to the null.
Ashe, brother.
But Reparations United is another organization that has primarily been focusing on national strategy for advancing reparations, continuing the fight with H.R. 40. And also right now they also have a campaign, which is, I guess, is a local campaign also. It's called the Slavery Disclosure Act. Mm-hmm. And again, we can.
Hello? Brother Jamoke? Might have lost him. If I lost you, hang up and call right back, brother. If I lost you, Brother Jamoke, hang up and call right back. All right. Yeah. That's going to be an interesting part of the conversation. Brother Jamoke, are you there now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Sure, very well. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying that one of the campaigns that Reparations United is doing is something called the Slavery Disclosure Act. Like I said, we can get to all of that stuff. And also, I work with, well, still other stuff too, but also working with, I have my own podcast called Reparations Now Podcast. So those are the primary work, and there's others that I do. But right now I'm excited to present to your listeners and to the community that I've volunteered to coordinate the Hall of Resistance induction ceremony. So during the Selma Bridge Jubilee bridge crossing every year that happens, there's about 40 or 50 different events that go on. There's all kinds of workshops and strategy meetings, and there's a street festival, there's a mock trial, there's a whole bunch of things, and Freedom Flame Awards. But one of the things that is a part of it as well is the Hall of Induction. And I've kind of really gravitated to that particular ceremony because she honors not just civil rights people, but, you know, our Black nationalist leaders, you know, people like Akinyele Umoja and Dr. Marlana Karenga and Aminata Umoja, and so many others have been inducted into that Hall of Resistance, and oftentimes I've helped to facilitate that ceremony. So this year I just volunteered to coordinate the whole ceremony.
I say.
And so, yeah. Who is being inducted? About that. So,
who is being inducted this year?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what we were talking about. So what I decided to make this year's theme around, in terms of the induction, and I don't know if they've ever done a theme or not, but I just pick people that they've inducted. But this year I thought I'd do it like somewhat around a theme, and the theme that I chose was prisoners of war, political prisoners, and those in exile.
All right, on. So, good.
Yeah, right. So we're lifting up. So we're going to be honoring. So we're inducting into the Hall of Resistance Brother Sundiata Okoli, Sister Asada Shakur, Baba Mumia Abu-Jamal,
yes,
Mama Pam Africa,
yes,
Imam Jamil Alameen,
yes,
Kathleen Cleaver, Geronimo Jijaga, Leonard Peltier, and Malcolm X.
I see.
So that's the lineup of the people that are being inducted, and even initially, you know, Leonard Peltier wasn't on the list, but somebody was in a meeting. We were having our regular meeting, and somebody said, "You know, Leonard Peltier is getting out, and we try to get him. See if we can get Amy Goodman to come," and all of this.
I don't know about getting Amy Goodman in Democracy Now, but Leonard Peltier has been in a long time.
Years.
Yeah,
49 years. And he came out looking good and came out strong.
He said,
"I am not broken. They did not break me. We're going to continue to fight."
I say.
And so the other one of the things also that I'm real proud of that I'm doing in relationship to this Hall of Resistance induction ceremony is I'm putting together a program book. So, you know, oftentimes you go to events and get a souvenir program book. So, you know, over the years they've been doing this event, and, you know, people don't know the context or the stories behind it and everything. So I went out and started collecting, and even we uncovered some stuff that we didn't even know. So, for example, the world renowned, I'll say, at least definitely renowned artist Tom Feeling came by the museum and saw the Hall of Resistance and bequeathed to the Hall of Resistance, a painting that he did called Resist. And if you look at it, it's like a bunch of people at a protest. Mm-hmm. But what I, but when we dug deeper into the history of the painting, we found out that it was based on a story, and we know he lived in Guyana. So it's based on a story of there was a self-determined community in Buxton, Guyana, and they were, you know, there was some law that they were about to pass that was going to make it, you know, more detrimental for them to do the work that they were doing. And so they heard that the governor was on his way, the European American governor was on his way passing through their town on a train. And so they literally put their bodies in front of the train to block the train, and they stopped the train. And he got off the train and met with them, and he turned his decision around and did not, you know, put forward that legislation that was going to be harmful to them. So this is what the meaning of the painting, Mama Faye Touré, who is the, who I should definitely lift up, who's been the visionary behind these commemorations every year for over 30 years, you know, and who came up with the idea of the Hall of Resistance induction ceremony. You know, she did not even know that story about the painting that Tom Feelings honored her with, and which is sort of like the theme painting of the Hall of Resistance. So we have,
man,
that story in the book.
Yeah.
We have the story about how Mama Faye went to Africa and was inspired by another activist in Mali, a sister named Maria Keita, who was working real diligently to try to Africanize the educational system there for young people in Mali, you know, just like here, you know, heavy on European culture, not heavy on African culture and history. And so she was doing that, and even so, doing it at such a high level, she ended up being put in jail. Mm-hmm. But she talked to Mama Faye about her idea of creating a museum to honor the resistance. And so that inspired Mama Faye Touré to come back and introduce the Hall of Resistance here in the United States as a part of a museum, which she already had, which is the Ancient African Enslavement and Civil War Museum. So let me put a pin in there. I feel like I'm talking a lot. But yeah, so those are some of the stories that we uncovered, and all of those stories are going to be in the souvenir program book. We're going to have biography information about the people who are being inducted this year. We're going to have, we have all of the, we have pictures of all the people who have been inducted in the past. There is a litany that Mama Faye has written that we read during the ceremony. Again, so all of this stuff had never been put together in the form of a book. So I'm real excited to make that contribution to the Hall of Resistance this year.
Well, I'm very excited about it and want to get a copy. That's for sure. Definitely want to get a copy of that. Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, I tell you, this is outstanding, because you're not just highlighting what happened, you know, 60 years ago in Selma, starting at Brown's Chapel, congregating,
right,
and then going on to the main street. Excuse me, family. Starting onto the main street that led to the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And as they marched over that bridge and off over that hill, as they descended down, they were met with the vicious and ugly law enforcement, not just of the city of Selma, but the state of Alabama.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and were given a severe beat down, you know.
Yes.
And so that must never be forgotten, and the sacrifices,
yes,
that they made. And so I know I did a little, you know, pull a piece up off of YouTube from the movie Selma.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear what happened to those brothers and sisters, you know, as they were descending from the top of the bridge, looking straight down, and you know, and about to meet an unfortunate and fatal situation. You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's again similar to the story about the people who stopped the train. I mean, it's a powerful story.
That is powerful. They stopped that train had him come off, and they talked to him, and man, you know.
And so we know with the Bloody Sunday, you know, even though the first time they were beat, and then the second time they knelt down and turned around and prayed, and then and didn't go through it, but then the third time they did, and they ended up, you know, walking all the way to Montgomery,
right?
And which is about a 55 mile, I think,
right,
54 walk.
Exactly.
And it took 5 days, doing about 10 miles a day. They would stop at churches or schools and set up camp, and then get up the next morning and continue to walk. And that led to, just like the legislation, that led to the voting rights legislation that was passed in 1965. Mm-hmm. And that march was strong and impetuous for the getting the Voting Rights Act to be passed.
Yeah.
So,
and I got a piece.
Yeah. And,
and I got another piece. Lyndon Johnson, his speech on the Voting Rights Act speech that that was broadcast across the country. And so give a little bit more context. But the bottom line is, you know, it's just like, as I said to you earlier, when we talked a couple of days ago, that I was in Selma on the 50th anniversary, and I'm down there reading the plaques where our brothers and sisters were getting clubbed and so forth by so-called law enforcement, you know.
Right.
And coming down the hill was Rance Priebus, who was the, at that time, the chairman of the Republican committee in Wisconsin. He was the Republican chair in Wisconsin. And I've been on a radio program with him, so forth, and I knew who he was. And so as he's coming down the hill, I look at him, I said, Rance Priebus. And he had three young people with him, two American African and one Caucasian. And so I told him point blank, I said, you know, this is very disingenuous of you, because your party, you know, a few years right before Barack took office, your party gutted the Voting Rights Act, you know, and makes it harder for us to continue to vote. And that's the whole idea about what happened at Selma, you know.
Right.
That's the Republicans, and that's what has happened. You know, it's ludicrous, as far as I'm concerned, to still talk about voting, you know, and still talking about the shenanigans that happen around voting. It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, it reminds me, and sometimes, you know, we as activists, and, you know, we have to figure out, you know, how the best way to engage our people. And, you know, people, you know, there's still a lot of people that hold out faith that, you know, through voting you can make a difference. And some differences can be made. What we also see is a lot of, though, oftentimes what happens is that, you know, one step forward, two step backwards.
Yep.
Some changes are made and laws are passed, but then those get reversed in different administrations. So it's quite a challenge, you know, and that's why, you know, I mean, I'm of the school of Black nationalism and Pan-Africanist personally. I feel like we need to separate
from
or go back to Africa.
Yes, you know, thank you.
School. But I see the merit in terms of working with and with these, you know, organizations and with our people to get them to see that as an alternative. Because if we're not in conversation with them, if we're not working with them, if we're not organized with them, they may never even consider or know about the options of, you know, separation and sovereign nation and things like that, you know. Like, so not to brag, but, you know, since I've been going there pretty much every year for the last 20 years now.
Oh, wow.
And actually, you mentioned the 50th anniversary, because to me that was the worst year. I feel sorry for people who went there, including myself.
Why?
I should qualify that. I say it was the worst year because going every year, that year, like, the traffic was horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember getting to the outskirts of Selma and just sitting in traffic for hours and driving on people's yards and stuff, trying to get past the traffic to get to.
Okay. So a lot of people wanted to be there for that 50th, and it's the same here because of brother.
Physically couldn't handle the numbers. Mm-hmm. And then you had the fact that, you know, with Obama being there and speaking, you had a layer of security and all of that. And, you know, we used to have to go through, you know, going through the metal detectors and all of that, and seeing, the police and the helicopters and police on the roofs, you know, overlooking us and stuff. It just wasn't, to me, it wasn't a good experience compared to the years that I used, you know, that I go when there isn't that level of numbers of people and the presidential, what happens when a president comes or a sitting president comes to an event like that and how it gets taken over.
Sure, it has to be.
And so that's why I say that. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure you had a good experience. A lot of people had a good experience. That's just my little.
Yeah, I know. Well, especially since you've been going for many years, but I was. In my retrospection, I felt good, but I didn't, because to me, once again, it's ludicrous that we have to fight for something that should be automatic as a citizen. But I understand our struggle, and I understand who we're dealing with. And so, and then also, too, I looked at the city of Selma. There was places in the city of Selma that looked like they probably did back in the 60s or 50s,
That is a sad reality of Selma as well. People come to that event and pour in, and then, it seemed like to me most of the money is just going to the hotels, like I imagine some restaurants, but the city itself doesn't really seem to really benefit from that, in terms of seeing some levels of development and stuff. Yeah, it does. It's almost like a time warp. It feels
Brother Jamoke, if you're saying this, and I haven't been there in 10 years, and you've been going for years, and you're still saying this, it just proves the fact. And it's sad, But it is very historic,
Right.
And there's a situation that happened that definitely we need, aside from the movie and other stuff, that we need to understand and know and and to make sure that it doesn't happen like that again to us, where we are marching right into, the clutches and the jaws of just vicious racism and indifference and evil, Let me play this. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, just real quick. One of the things I was saying, I think that's just adding on to what you're saying. I think one of the things that to me that's important about the gathering in Selma, because it beyond the commemoration, and one of the things that Mama Fire likes what she says when she says that every issue is a voting rights issue. So whatever issue you have, whether it's reparations, which is my issue, or whatever, it's a voting rights issue. Even voting rights is a voting rights issue. But what I was going to say, though, is that I think that what's somewhat important too is the reason why I like to go to Selma is because in addition to those commemorations and activities, there's also some strategy meetings, and there's also, sitting down Legal Defense Fund, the NAACP, and ACLU, and Al Sharpton, and Dick Gregory, and others.
Right.
He's now passed. Others, who, and Jesse Jackson, when he was more functioning, when people, these leaders, as well as their staff and others, I want to just always lift up the front people, but like this time as well as in the past, there was always times to have these strategy meetings and conversations as well to navigate and address certain issues and concerns that we have in the community. And this year would be similar with high level. Well, like I said, every year there's a lot of organizations and leadership of different organizations and their members come to have these workshops and strategy sessions in addition to just the more ceremonial stuff.
Right on. Here's a piece from the movie Selma.
Okay.
From 2014, which of course is right before the 50th anniversary. And so we're going to play a little cut from there. And excuse me. And this is at the moment that the brothers and sisters are walking down the Edmund Pettus Bridge and is met by dogs and clubs and just pure evil. And in fact, when I read that the governor Wallace had deputized, or the city of Selma had deputized, all kinds of people, so giving these people the right, you know, to beat our ass, point blank,
right.
You know. So here's a piece from Selma.
Or 20 Negroes were swept to the ground, screaming, arms and legs flying, packs and bags went skittering across the grassy divider. Those still on their feet retreated. A cheer went up from the white spectators lining the south side of the highway. The troopers continued pushing, using both the force of their bodies and the prodding of their nightsticks. Suddenly there was a sharp sound like a gunshot, and a gray cloud spewed over the troopers and the Negroes. But before the cloud hit it all, there were several seconds of unobstructed view. Nightsticks could be seen through the gas, flailing at the heads of the marchers. The Negroes cried out as they crowded together for protection, and the whites on the sidelines whooped and cheered.
Yeah. That's what happened, family. That's a scene from the movie Selma, where they were going over the Edmund Pettus Bridge. When they left Brown's Chapel and congregated on that street, they didn't know and didn't see what was beyond that bridge. When you got to the top of it, you saw what was down at the bottom, and they came down there, and that's what happened. They were met with evil, vicious men with nightsticks and tear gas and dogs and horses. I know if you hope you heard the horses, because they were galloping down there, just hitting brothers and sisters upside the head with nightsticks.
Yeah.
Vicious, yeah. So.
Yeah, honestly, I couldn't hear most of it, but yeah. Yeah. So, and, you know, again, you know, I think about Baba Wakesa, you know, he always, you know, he encourages us to tell the story from, you know, the perspective of victory, as mm-hmm. opposed to from, you know, the perspective of, you know, the
beatings. Yeah, I hear you. I agree.
Whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, they endured that, yet they were successful in their mission. They made it to Selma. They got the Voting Rights Act passed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what, you know, we should, you know, remind. The lesson should be for our young people that, you know, that people can be determined, and even in the face of opposition, even in the face of physical restraint and brute force, you can still be successful with your mission and your goal.
Well, that's the whole thing about, you know, keeping the faith and the ultimate goal, you know, regardless of how we're going to get there, we're going to get there. You know, here's the piece that Lyndon Baines Johnson addressing Congress as it relates to the Voting Rights Act. This is a speech that was hailed by many of the brothers and sisters at that time who believed mm-hmm. that this system was making a turn.
Mm-hmm.
There is no constitutional issue here. The command of the Constitution is plain. There is no moral issue. It is wrong, deadly wrong, to deny any of your fellow Americans the right to vote in this country. There is no issue of states' rights or national rights. There is only the struggle for human rights. I have not the slightest doubt what will be your answer. But the last time a president sent a civil rights bill to the Congress, it contained a provision to protect voting rights in federal elections. That civil rights bill was passed after 8 long months of debate. And when that bill came to my desk from the Congress for my signature, the heart of the voting provision had been eliminated. This time, on this issue, there must be no delay or no hesitation or no compromise with our purpose.
Brother Oshie?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I got disconnected. Someone was calling me. I got disconnected.
We cannot, we must not refuse to protect the right of every American to vote in every election that he may desire to participate in. And we ought not, and we cannot, and we must not wait another 8 months before we get a bill. We have already waited 100 years and more, and the time for waiting is gone. So I ask you to join me in working long hours, nights, and weekends if necessary, to pass this bill. And I don't make that request lightly. Far from the window where I sit with the problems of our country, I recognize that from outside this chamber is the outraged conscience of a nation, the grave concern of many nations, and the harsh judgment of history on our acts. But even if we pass this bill, the battle will not be over. What happened in Selma is part of a far larger movement which reaches into every section and state of America. It is the effort of American Negroes to secure for themselves the full blessings of American life. Their cause must be our cause too. Because it's not just Negroes, but really it's all of us who must overcome the crippling legacy of bigotry and injustice. And we shall overcome.
We shall overcome. Yeah. Well, I tell you. Still think about when something that's happened so long ago that we're still fighting these particular issues, just to me, asinine and ludicrous. So, but go ahead, Brother Jamoke.
Yeah, so again, Saturday is the main day where there's lots of activities. I encourage you to come to the Hall of Resistance that I just that we've spoken about, which is on Saturday at 4 p.m.
Where's the Saturday Hall of Resistance located? Where's that located in Selma?
It's inside the African... the Ancient African Enslavement and Civil War Museum, which is 1410 Water Street.
Okay. Is that near the Brown's Chapel or the Edmunds Pettus Bridge and all those historic markers, anything like that? Is that near that area?
Yeah. Before you get to the side where they would be, right, that's Selma proper. And the main street that runs perpendicular to the bridge.
Okay.
Right before you get to the bridge is called mm-hmm. Water Street. That's where you have a whole strip of businesses and mm-hmm. stores and everything. So the museum is on that street. You're facing the bridge, it's to your left.
Okay.
Just walking distance from the bridge. Or maybe a few blocks down from the bridge. Mm-hmm. Right downtown. I guess you call that downtown Selma.
Okay, I feel you. Yeah,
it's the main thoroughfare. I mean, it's the main thoroughfare right before you get to the main street, really, right before you get to the bridge.
How many years has the Wall of Resistance been in existence?
That's a good question. That I need to find out. I know they've been doing the commemorations now for about 30 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
33 years they've been doing the annual commemorations. And but I'm not sure exactly what year she brought the Hall of Resistance into being. So I need to get that information. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that question. And then also, like I said, Saturday, again, if you have young people, whatever, there's lots of workshops and things for young people to do as well. There's a Black History Bowl. There's a Saturday night, there's also the Freedom Flame Award, which is in gala, which is a fundraiser, which is very, very nice. And then Sunday is the day, particularly,
right,
in Atlanta, people close by, if you just wanted to pop in just to participate in the symbolic bridge crossing.
Right.
So again, you would meet at Brown Chapel AME, as you've mm-hmm. mentioned before, Brown Chapel AME at 11. And from 11 to 11:30 is what they call a pre-conference rally mm-hmm. with various speakers. And then we go and walk from Brown Chapel, go across the bridge. And then on the other side, there'll be a post-march rally as well with speakers and stuff as well. So, I remember, it just made me think about, because they don't always do the rally on the other side, which I feel like I think they really should kind of do that every year, because like you watch all over the bridge and then it's almost a little anticlimactic, you come across and people are just milling around and talking and and stuff. And I think if there was a rally there, that would kind of still keep the energy strong.
Right.
But I remember one of the years I came there, and I have created, that's a whole nother story, guys. I always feel like I got so many sub stories. But anyway, I created some years ago what I call the Reparations Ancestral Shrine. And I carried it to Selma one of the first years after I created it, and walked with it in the parade. And the shrine is, and so when I told Mama Fire what it was, because you can't really tell, it's a big bundle of fabric. You just need a fabric, and inside the fabric is a pot. Mm-hmm. But and so she asked me what it was, and I told her what it was, and she was like, "Oh yeah, you got to speak about reparations." And I'm like, "So we're at the valley at the end of the bridge, and I'm speaking after Martin Luther King III, and Jesse Jackson, and people like that."
Yeah.
I like the speakers at the rally, and it's like, "You next, you book and talk about reparations." And again, I was young in my years in the reparations movement, so I was like, okay.
Yeah, right on.
You know, to go on stage after those luminaries was quite awesome. Yeah, so, yeah. But, so Sunday, and then it's usually over about 2, so plenty of time to jump back on the road back to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. However, also, there is going to be a fundraiser banquet, I'm not fundraising banquet, excuse me, fundraiser concert on Sunday if people want to stay a little bit later. That's from 2 to 6 p.m. And the highlight, what do you call it, the featured artist.
Right.
The featured artist is Asher Havan, and they were the winner of The Voice from the season.
Oh, really?
25.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I don't know the entertainer, but yeah, I know The Voice.
Yeah, that's then there'll be other artists as well,
mm-hmm.
but that's the featured artist, and it's a fundraiser for Selma, for some of those museums that they have there, keeping the story alive. So yeah, and like I said, there's a full on day of activities on Saturday, and even activities on starting as early as Thursday with the town hall meeting on Thursday, and then like I said, Saturday just super full with activities and workshops and street festival, all kinds of stuff.
Right on. Good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, once again, the whole idea of the 65 Voting Rights Act and what happened with that definitely should be commemorated, and we should discuss it, like all the things that are happening this weekend or this weekend coming up. Definitely should be done, and we should understand the sacrifice that were made and the people who have literally given their lives to make that happen.
Yeah.
Now, I never use the adage, we died for the right to vote. I don't use that. I know there were some people who were killed. There's no doubt, But I understand. As far as I'm concerned, voting is not a panacea, for us as a people.
Right.
But on a local level, it can make some difference. It can put an individual into a political office that might be African-centered, that might be a Pan-Africanist, that might be somebody who has a strong voice or who will advocate on our behalf and so forth. I was impressed with some of the strong voices that are in this Congress, aside from Jasmine Crockett and a few others. There are some good, strong voices. And on a local level, like in Tennessee, those brothers in Tennessee, I understand what voting can do. But for what I'm concerned about, independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people.
Mm-hmm.
The motto of this program that I have is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. And I recognize that that's not going to come, although I would agree with a plebiscite, a vote, you know, on what to do with reparations. I think that's very important. Mm-hmm. And we need to understand what we, you know, because some of us, because we're here in America, and America is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. So they only see reparations as a check, and they don't give a damn. That's the same thing with ADOS. ADOS and how they operate, just get a check. You know, the word reparations, the root word is repair. I want us to be That's repaired. Right. I want us to have this whole idea to repair our hearts and our minds for education, to build institutions, to build educational institutions, medical institutions within our community, and then transcend that to global, to go to the continent, to do things there. Because really, reparations must be global, because even as we speak, Brother Jamoke, as you know, you have still the Europeans and the Arabs and the Chinese and the Koreans all up in Africa. All up in Africa. So, you know, reparations should be something that we talk about globally, particularly from the Europeans and even the others, because of what has happened to us. So if we're going to be a people in the future who can compete, you know, it is no doubt about it that we have to come together. Now, coming together happens first. And then once we're together, then we know that we can get reparations, because we can not only petition for them, but we can do things that make sure that those who want the resources out of Africa can't get them until they pay what they owe. And then the materials out of Africa will be at fair market value. These are the kind of things that, for us, if we're going to have a future, that we must do. So, yeah, man, this is a very serious, you know, I'm really anxious to see the book of the brothers and sisters who are in the book, and the whole idea of the wall of resistance, because I'm all about resistance, you know?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm going to build on some of the things that you just said. I'm going to start with them.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what. Brother Jamoke. Okay. Hold on. You hold on. Hold on to that. Let me take a break. Okay?
Okay.
So when we come back from the break, and you can start right there, and then we got some callers on the line. So brothers and sisters, hold on. And for those callers, you know what to do. Hit star twice, and you can join the conversation. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I'm talking with Brother Jamoke about the Selma activities this weekend coming up for the 60th anniversary of Bloody Sunday. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
It's a different world. Sound like a crawfish ball in New Orleans. Black folk joke around like Martin and got paintings from JJ in the living room. It sounds strong. Look like sacrifice. It'd be flowers blooming in the summertime. Black sound like old songs. Smell like good food. and it tastes like heart disease, but it feels like maize at Jazz Fest. Black sound like something that hurt, like a hard test. Black sound like skin, like something dark. It look like hair, yeah. Black sound like rough hair and good hair. Look like history, sound spiritual. Black sound like years, like working, like night. Black sound like money. Look like Walmart, like corner stores, like cash register singing. Black sound like 400 years. Smell like Oprah. Impactful like Martin. Look like Cicely Tyson. Sing like Nina. Got an ass like Serena. Feel like broken homes in Section 8. Black smell like crack and collard greens. Sounds motivational. Feels like church. Look like big Sunday hats and ribbons.
Smile like your mama. Eyes like the sun. Beautiful child.
Sound like thick flats swinging and sneaky uncles. Look like Tyler Perry making money. Sound like hating, feel frustrated, don't it? Like they don't get it. Like they won't ever get it, huh? Like push your personal feelings of racial injustice so far underneath the carpet that you trip over your own family history. But I love me some black folk. I love the hair grease and the rental fees, the front row seats, the police, the projects, the mustard greens, being late, social security checks, government assistance, bougie, black, looking good, bags of hair, fake press on nails, rat tail comb, stunning gold chain, gold teeth, black men and big feet. I love me some black folk. For they are the people that were made from the darkest parts of the sky.
Smile like your mama, eyes like the sun. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one. Fly like your daddy, make me so happy. Beautiful child, oh, you're the one. I'm in a place when I see your face. Must be nostalgia. I'll never forget the day that we met, beautiful child, oh, you're the one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Black, don't crack, I love your skin. I don't see that from a looking. Yesterday and any day, I see me and mine doing different things. Pushing boundaries, waves come, age come.
From the 504, what you think I came to L.A. for?
Everybody from the 504, what you think I came to L.A. for? Everybody from the 504, what you think I came to L.A. for? Everybody from the 504, what you think I came to L.A. for?
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah. Sister Tank and the Bangas, New Orleans, 504, New Orleans. I love some black, don't you? I know I do. I love Africans, that's for sure. We're talking today with Brother Jamoke Ifeateyi, and we're talking about, first things first, is Selma and the 60th commemoration of Bloody Sunday and all the activities that are happening around that. And also, too, about, because Brother Jamoke is with a number of groups now. He used to be, well, say he still does some work with in Cobra. But so we'll talk about all of that. And you can join the conversation by giving us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brother, what's happening? Brother Jamoke.
Yes, thank you, brother. Yeah, so you mentioned a few things I wanted to respond to.
Sure.
So one of the things that you is, and you've made the segue into reparations, so that's fine and that's great. So one of the things that you were speaking about towards the end of your comments was around, reparations being a global cause. And so that's what's actually happening right now. Probably many people may not know is that the African Union has chosen for its theme for 2025, and I quote, "Justice for Africans and people of African descent through reparations," close quote. And that thing was just launched this year at the AU in February. And so they've been meeting with people from the diaspora around, continuing to flesh that out and what that's going to look like. Mm-hmm. But, I think this is important that the African Union has signaled or got on board publicly more with reparations movement and reparations campaign. And after the break was good, because then it gave me a minute to pull up some more about that. So I'm just going to read the goals real quick, if
Thank
that's
you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, address historical injustices like colonialism, apartheid, and the transatlantic slave trade. Number two, create a common African position on reparations. Number three, establish an African repertory program of action. Number five, collaborate with the Caribbean community. I'm sorry, that's four. Collaborate with the Caribbean community, CARICOM, and the African diaspora. And five, foster unity and establish mechanisms for reparatory justice globally. So, again, I think this is significant.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think we should, continue to pay attention to Brother Ibrahim Traoré.
No doubt.
If I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
But the brother is amazing, and I'm just hoping somebody don't come and tell me that, Jamoke, he did X, Y, Z, it's not so good. But so far, everything that I've seen that he's done has been right on point.
As long as they don't come in and say he's been assassinated, I mean, if he's done something truly egregious, that's another issue, but he is on point in all that he's doing, and he's the leader of the Sahel, along with Mali and in the South. So
Burkina Faso.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's on point, and mm-hmm. I think he's really demonstrating what the kind of African leadership that we need
yes.
at this time, and he is amazing. And and then also, CARICOM is still continuing to push the reparations agenda. And then earlier in your comments, you were talking about voting rights and how you can make a difference on the local level. And so I mentioned that I worked with First Repair, which is, like I said, came out of Evanston, which was birthed in Evanston, which is a city that was the first municipal city to actually begin to grant reparations and has a full-on reparations program. So they are actually, I don't remember the exact number, but I know it's over $5 million now that they have dispersed the reparations payments to Black Evanstonians.
Yeah.
And so I think that's major, and they're continuing to be successful. They're continuing to roll that out.
Well, one of the things about that particular piece is the fact that they traced that whole restitution or reparations to the fact that they were redlined, their property was devalued, their property was stolen,
okay.
and so forth. And they won that case, And so therefore, the courts had to, and the city of Evanston had to repay them for what had happened to them,
Yeah. Well, Well, I know it was so much. It wasn't so much a court case, but it was really the court of public opinion. Mm-hmm. They wanted to pass the legislation, and so to me, it speaks to the point of what you were saying about local elected officials, because they had the support of the local elected officials to move forward with it. Even the mayor, and actually, you know, the city makeup, the city council makeup, is predominantly European American, and the mayor is European American male. But they all are behind and supportive of this initiative. So, you know, that's why I was just thinking about that in terms of the context of what you were saying in terms of local elected officials. And then also bringing it home to Atlanta, you know, Fulton County, you know, created a reparations task force. And they've been convened, I think, over a little over 2 years now. And so what's happened now is that they commissioned the Clarkland University research arm at Clarkland University to do research on the role, you know, on Fulton County and its impact on people of African descent from the founding of the county, which was during still enslavement period. I think 1862 or something like that was when it was founded. And continue that research up to the present, you know, like convict leasing and all of these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so they have submitted their research to the Fulton County Commission. And so what the Fulton County Commission is now doing is taking that research and putting it more in the form of a report. And then they want to release that to the community and then get community input along with their own ideas in terms of what should be the recommendations then to Fulton County to do whatever type of reparatory justice is recommended. And so I really want people to keep up with this. I've been keeping up with it, even though I'm here in Florida, but I've been keeping up with it. And I think, you know, at the point that they say, you know, that, you know, we're ready now to share this with the community and we're looking for community input, we should have that place should be packed. We should have people, you know, that come there with ideas, with proposals around what kind of recommendations that could be made to Fulton County around reparations initiatives for Fulton County, Georgia. And then Atlanta, the Atlanta Commission has been a little slow to really get itself off the ground. Some people have been suggested to be commissioners, and many of them have not confirmed yet if they want to be on the commission or not. A draft, and this is just recent because I was just at the meeting on Wednesday, and they are still working on creating bylaws, and after the bylaws are created and enough people are seated and confirmed, then they'll probably will hold elections for the Atlanta City reparations. But again, this is, again, people in Atlanta should be, they should be. I would like people in Atlanta to consider keeping up with this process and you know, voicing your opinion and giving input, because like you've mentioned before, you know, there is ADOS out there and they are very vocal and they already have people that are pushing their position inside this Atlanta reparations.
Right, and you're right. Yeah.
As well. And so luckily there wasn't any real ADOS people, I would say, on the Fulton County one. Even though Marcus Coleman ended up kind of leaning more ADOS. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about local politics, these are examples of how our engagement in the process and our engagement with our elected officials at the local level, because these commissions are public commissions. They're like, you know, again, people are appointed. It's just like a government agency. So it's important that we get more involved in those initiatives locally.
Ashe, and that's for sure. You know, once again, I know that for me personally, and I believe in our struggle as Africans is to repair ourselves, to understand the damage that has been done to us, and specifically with the mental side that we continue to experience of why we cannot work together, why at this point in time of our history we've been so manipulated and undermined, particularly in this system, in the American system, because the American system is, the way they run shit is just trippy, you know. It gives you the illusion, of inclusion. And of course, every social ill in this society, every social ill, you name it, is more profound in us than anybody else. So I mean, all of these things say to you that this is not good for you. This is not going to happen for you here. And what you need to do is organize and educate and to prepare to get up out of here. You know, that's my mindset. You know, as a Pan-African, that's my mindset. You know, if we're really going to talk about, you know, being a people again, having the respect of each other, and the respect and love for each other, and to build family. You know, when we were in captivity, we had family. You know, they kind of split up at the turn of the last century because men left, you know, and moved north for better jobs. Many of them brought their families or sent for them later. But, you know, and even at the time, in the 60s, 70-some percent of our families were intact. But look at today, it's less than 30. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, this system is not good for us. And it's proven that time and time again. We got some callers, brothers and sisters, if you want to join this conversation, hit star twice. You can join the conversation if you're already in the queue. And or dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brother Ted Lusk, good afternoon. Calling from Montgomery. Calling from Montgomery, Alabama.
Jumbo. And this is Brother Jamoke?
Yeah, Jamoke. Jamoke.
Hey, Jumbo, brother. It's a pleasure to hear your voice and to
see Jumbo.
You know, of course, this weekend, as was mentioned, is going to be a really powerful weekend once again after 60 years, right? And so with all of the activities that's going to be held there, it's really going to be, you know, a lot of people in that proximity. But, you know, I was thinking, I just wonder if other people will take the time out to go further up Highway 80 just a tad bit and then intersect with Highway 14 or Highway 45, right? And the reason being because just up the road a bit, maybe about 45 minutes or so, is Marion, Alabama. And I want to highlight Marion, Alabama specifically because where Jimmie Lee Jackson was killed.
Oh, yeah, the brother,
place
yeah.
The place is no longer standing. It's not there, but there are monuments and reminders of what had transpired in Marion, Alabama. And so it's just interesting. I just wonder, boy, I wish I was a tour guide of sorts to bring folks up that way to go to Marion. And in addition to that, pour libations at Jimmie Lee Jackson's gravesite in the third cemetery there. So, it's going to be powerful once again and impactful. And Sister Yomi and Mama Ture and all of the other folks that are in that area will definitely, you know, welcome people with open arms, which is interesting because Highway 80 goes into Selma, and just logistically speaking, and then goes within the circle. So it's sort of like it's going to be everyone in downtown at the foot of the bridge, right? Traffic is going to be it won't be any traffic at all with all of the people that's going to be occupying that space, right, going across the bridge both directions, right? So, you know, you got to get out there early and get you a good parking spot and of course, you know, make your way around as you go. So either way, you're either going to go over that bridge once or you're going to go over that bridge twice. So, but other than that, it's good walking and everything. So I just wanted to point that out. That hopefully there are people considering Marion, Alabama, as part of this experience. And just to highlight, when Jimmie Lee Jackson got shot, and this is what I would hope that would be emphasized, he got shot in Marion, Alabama. When he was shot and bled by the policeman who shot him there, he had to travel some distance to get the hospital in Selma. And so just the energy with the direction coming from Marion to Selma, people could pick up on that energy that man, slowly but surely, losing his life by the time he got to the hospital. I think that was Good Shepherd Hospital in Selma. And anyway, be that as it may, I want to interject. And hey, it's going to be an interesting day. Hopefully the weather will be, you know, nice and clear for people to enjoy themselves, et cetera. So, yeah. And there's also being here in Montgomery, Alabama, you know, that trek came through here, right? So, let's see. Last week, there was a bicycle ride. As a matter of fact, people on their bikes traveled Highway 80 from Selma to Montgomery, and they took the historic trail. There, of course, Brother Jamoke. Did I pronounce it right?
Jamoke.
Okay, Jamoke. Thank you for being patient with me pronouncing your name, brother. And so with all of the activities from Thursday, I understand that Stedman is going to be in town. Stedman, to get his last name, who's associated with can't call her name.
Oprah Winfrey. Oh, that's Stedman?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's going to be in town Wednesday to talk about economic impact.
Okay.
So one of the dynamics is on Wednesday or Thursday he'll be in town and there are a bunch of discussions. So a lot of activities.
I see.
Up Highway 80.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for picking my call as always, and it's a pleasure to listen and continue to learn, brothers.
Right on. Thank you, Brother Ted Lusk. Yeah. Appreciate you. Right on.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. Yeah, I think it is important to always include the Jimmie Lee Jackson story, because that was really the impetus, I think, that from what I understand, that sparked Bevel to really even come up with the idea, I'm just going to walk to Montgomery. Mm-hmm. And so other people, you know, rallied around that idea. But also, I think what's important that you did, what you mentioned, this is something that I do. I mentioned that I created this Reparations Ancestral Shrine. And I guess maybe this, I said there's a whole story behind that, but basically the idea of the Reparations Ancestral Shrine is to be a spiritual power to move us closer to reparations. And part of the way that we, collect that power or power up the Reparations Ancestral Shrine is that we go to sacred places and we pour libation and we collect a little bit of dirt and a little bit and a rock. And the rock symbolizing the masculine energy and the dirt symbolizing the feminine energy, and we plant a cowrie shell. And we've been doing this all over the country. We've gone to different places in cities and towns and different places around the United States and even around the world that are sacred places for people of African descent, particularly, you know, starting out focusing on, when I say sacred, we were primarily qualifying that meaning places where blood had been spilled. So, in addition to Jimmie Lee Jackson, it's been to the Lorraine Hotel with Martin Luther King, you know, assessment.
Yes.
And it, I don't give the long, it's a long list of places that we have, that the Reparations Ancestral Shrine has gone. That's why I even brought it to Selma that year when I was talking about it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And has gone to various reparations conferences around the country. Even been to Jamaica, went by the birth home of Marcus Garvey. I could go on and on and on. But yeah, the point I wanted to lift up was I appreciate the brother mentioning going to these sacred places and tapping into the energy and pouring libation and honoring through prayer and song and libation those sacred places. And that is something that's a part of the work that I do in this movement as well.
Yeah, I tell you, let me just read this real quick. On February 18th in 1965, C.T. Vivian led a march to the courthouse in Marion, the county seat of neighboring Perry County, to protest the arrest of James Orange. State officials had received orders to target C.T. Vivian, and a line of Alabama state troopers waited for the marchers at the Perry County Courthouse. Officials had turned off all of the nearby streetlights, and state troopers rushed at the protesters, attacking them. Protester Jimmy Lee Jackson, his grandfather and his mother, fled the scene to hide in a nearby cafe. State trooper Corporal James Bernard Fowler followed Jackson into a cafe and shot him, saying he thought the protesters were trying to get his gun, as they always say, he's trying to get their gun, as they grappled. Jackson died 8 days later in a Selma Good Samaritan Hospital of an infection resulting from the gunshot wound. The death of Jimmie Lee Jackson prompted civil rights leaders to bring their cause directly to the Alabama governor, George Wallace, by performing a 54-mile march from Selma to the state capital of Montgomery. Jackson was the only male wage earner of his family in his household, which lived in extreme poverty. Jackson's grandfather, mother, wife, and children were all left with no resource of income. Man, I tell you. Let me catch another caller here. Brother Irv, how you doing?
Bob Oshie, thank you for taking my call.
For sure, dear brother.
Bob Oshie, I'm listening to this. The brothers speak about the events that they've been doing, the remembrance and the libations all over this country, all over the world, actually. And brother, we have to tell our story. If you know, it takes. I commend people like these brothers who do these things, because do I have the energy to do it? Yes, I do. But there are people that are doing these things, and they need to be highlighted. They need to be recognized. Because it takes, I mean, you have to do this. You just don't get up and say, I'm going to go down here and pour some libation and go on back home to my. It don't work like that, bro. We talking plane tickets. We talking coordination. Right. We talking a support group. This is not just something haphazard. And if you don't tell our story, if we don't tell our story, someone else is going to tell it for us.
That's right.
And they're going to tell it what they think happened, how they saw it from their point of view. Because when you grow up in this country and you become conscious and you start to understand what it is that's going on around you and why our families are broken up and why our children are running around with no clothes on, and why are drugs so concentrated? Why is opium so concentrated in our neighborhoods when we don't even grow poppy seeds, huh? Why we got guns, Baba Ocean? We don't even have a gun factory.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Mm-hmm. Why can't I mean? So the point I'm making is you have to think that there's got to be a man behind the curtain, brother.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah,
the God I serve. The God I in my lifetime, my short lifetime, I've seen God do amazing things. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about spirituality. God has done amazing things. Every time I wake up, I got some water to drink, and my heart didn't stop beating while I was sleeping. These things are important.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the point I'm making, I don't believe that God wanted us to forget what happened. I don't think God wanted us to live with the pain.
Right.
It's still painful to hear that story you just told about this brother getting shot in the cafe because some white person decided he wanted to shoot him. That's all that was. He wasn't reaching for a
That's
gun.
Right.
You know it and I know
That's
it.
That's right.
But these brothers going to do these libations and celebrating and just acknowledging what happened so that people cannot just get the story they get from Yerugu, which is the Caucasian. They get the story from people that look like you. What you feel. Go ahead, brother.
Go ahead. Thanks, son. Let me just say this. About the unfortunate situation with Jimmie Lee Jackson, that Caucasian was brought to justice to some degree, a very small degree, later on in his life. But he only served 6 months in prison.
What?
6 months in jail or in prison, whatever, for the murder of Jimmie Lee Jackson. That was years later.
6 months.
Yeah, 6 months.
Mm-hmm. But you understand, Baba Oshie. But we don't see it happening. Is it him being restricted and have to stay somewhere for 6 months? But he had to live. His life had to be torturous. Mm-hmm. Because killing someone unjustly is not something. I've never done it, and I can't imagine closing my eyes and seeing that person every time. Because Baba Oshie, wrong is wrong, mm-hmm. all day, every day. When you're wrong, and you know you're wrong. And he had to live with that,
yeah.
even though that may not be enough for some people. But for me, you know what you did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why you got these white folks running around here. Oh, we just love black people. You don't love me. You love yourself, and you fear me because you think I'm going to do to you what you did to me.
I say.
But it was so bad what white folks did to us. I'm going to let someone else on the phone. It was so bad what they did to us. Continuously over 400 years, that they don't even want to talk about it now. They don't even want to talk about the demonic things that they did to black people, mm-hmm. Operating with no anesthesia and the sexual exploits that they did to the children. Mm-hmm. They don't want to talk. If it was it that bad, you don't even want to talk about it?
Yeah. Yeah, they in denial. They in denial. I don't mean a river in Kemet. They in denial about the whole thing. They want to pretend like it didn't happen.
But let me let someone else get on.
All right,
this brother, what you're doing, I commend you. I support you wholeheartedly. And not just me. There are many out there like myself who know that the work you're doing is important. The work that's being done is very important. And we've already won. We've already won because we're still breathing. And we're still breathing, and we still have the mindset to know
fighting.
What's going on around us. Mm-hmm. I see the black families dwindling. You do, too. And we're doing mm-hmm. something about it. We're not just standing around or just, I'll sure be glad when Master stop messing with us. We're not doing that. We're doing things. And just the fact that you acknowledge that what happened, that in itself speaks volumes. So thank you, my brother. Ashe.
Right on. Brother Jamoke.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate the appreciation. Thank you very much. I'm touched by it. Thank you, brother. Mm-hmm. It inspires me to continue to do this work.
Well, you're a tireless worker. You know, since I've moved here to Atlanta and I first met you, man, you've been on the case all the time in various cultural activities in this city and now in Florida and elsewhere, you know, because you, like myself, we believe in assisting our people in the transformation from what we were to what we must become, and that is Africans, you know. And so we're doing our best in that work. So we have another caller. Brother Jay, what's happening? Brother Jay? Okay. Jay, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Okay, hear you very well, brother. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I just got a chance to tune in, so I don't know what you're talking about. Just put me on.
Okay, well, here, huh? Let me explain to you. So we got a brother on, Brother Jamoke Fantail, who is involved with a lot of organizations, particularly around reparations, but he's focusing at this moment on the Selma commemorative. It's the 60th commemorative year of what happened in Selma, Alabama, with Bloody Sunday and so forth. And he's done a lot of things. In fact, he has a wall of resistance, those brothers who are resistance. And this year, they're highlighting a lot of the Pan-African brothers and sisters, like Sashada Shakur and Mumia Abdul-Jamal and so forth, you know, both those who have passed and those who are still in the fight. So you're on the line with Brother Jamoke. So go ahead and continue to listen.
Well, listen, put me on hold, and I'll listen and get back to you.
All right, dear brother.
Hotel.
Brother Jamoke.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate this, man, and the opportunity to learn some of the things that you're involved in. And when do you do your program?
Yeah, so it's every other Sunday at 5:30 p.m. People can check me out on YouTube. Reparations Now podcast on YouTube.
Reparations Now on every other Sunday?
Podcast. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm writing that down.
Yeah, last episode we did was actually touched on some of the subject we were just talking about. It was called Spirituality of Reparations, and had a really profound guest. She's Her Royal Majesty Queen Mother Dawoti Desire. She's a Mambo, which is trained in the Voodoo system in Haiti, mm-hmm. But also she's gone to Benin and been further initiated into our African sacred sciences, and was given the title of being Queen Mother for the diaspora. And so she is, but she's done a lot of work around African culture and traditions, and at the, you know, getting it more recognized inside the United Nations, mm-hmm. and just in general. She's also one of the people that's interested in how stuff comes full circle. She's also was someone who was motivated to go around the world as well to different monuments and sites. But mm-hmm. she has actually put together a book with over 90 historical sites that she's gone to.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure, you know, does libation and ceremonies mm-hmm. when she goes there. So we had a whole conversation just on the spirituality.
Now, where is she at? Where is she located?
She's based in New York. Well, between mm-hmm. New York and Benin.
In Benin, okay.
And she's in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the last episode that we did.
Okay. You said every mm-hmm. every other Sunday, right?
Yes.
So what is that?
So you need to figure out which one. Yeah, so the next one is this coming Sunday.
This Sunday, okay.
So yeah, March.
Okay, and that's that.
March 9th, next episode. And we'll be interviewing Nkechi Taifa.
Okay, and that's from
Powerhouse.
That's from five to six?
At 5:30 to 6:30. I don't know why I picked that odd time, but yeah, it's 5:30 to 6:30.
Okay. And you can pick that up off of YouTube?
YouTube, yes. Sir.
Okay. And it's called Reparations Now.
Podcast.
Reparations Now Podcast.
Mm-hmm. And then if you go to that, you put that in, and then you can subscribe, and then that way you can get announcements of the upcoming shows.
Yeah, I sure will.
We'll have to figure out which Sunday is.
that will help. Yeah. Well, this coming Sunday the 9th, so. Yeah. Well, my brother, I really appreciate this, man, and the opportunity, and I know that you have an exciting weekend ahead of you, and you're still going to be able to broadcast, of course, this Sunday, and you're going to be in.
Yeah, something interesting, but yeah. And I didn't mention, one of the things I'm excited about is that we're going to be bringing in one of Malcolm X's daughters to receive the award on his behalf. So we're going to be bringing in Ilyasa Shabazz.
Outstanding, yeah.
To receive the award for Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
And, Pam Africa will be coming herself, and hopefully we're going to get, she's trying to
this Sunday, they're going to be in Selma this Sunday?
Yes.
Right on. Okay.
Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the ceremony is on Saturday. The Hall of Resistance induction ceremony is Saturday.
Okay.
And both of them will be there. And then Brother Ward Churchill mm-hmm. To receive the award for Leonard Peltier, longtime Native American activist. Lives in Atlanta, Natsu Saitu, who is a law professor and also was very close with Kathleen Cleaver.
Mm-hmm.
And I think who else do we have? Am I leaving out?
That's mm-hmm. great. You got a good group of brothers and sisters to commemorate and to give accolades and awards to, and because truly they're in the struggle. Sada Shakur, well, of course, you know.
Yeah.
I think this admirable of the Cuban government not to give that sister up all these many years.
Yes.
And
yes, sir.
Allow her to live in some kind of comfort, you know.
Mm.
And that's,
yeah.
Because I know, mm-hmm. I heard Barack's ass was definitely trying to get her too, you know, to come back and go in front of the courts for American justice. Get shit out of here. She and I remember him saying that for her to face the justice system.
Mm.
Yeah. So right on.
Yeah, you know, interesting because all of these court cases were totally flawed, and you know, whether you talk about Geronimo, Sundiata, Fada, mm-hmm. Imam Jamil, you know, I was living in Atlanta at the time when Imam Jamil was, mm-hmm. Arrested and everything. And, you know, I remember there was a brother, I don't remember his name now, but there was a brother who was like collecting the news articles mm-hmm. as they came out about Imam Jamil. And he would show, like, on Wednesday, they said one thing, and then he'll show you Thursday paper, they're saying something else, and then they show the Friday paper, they say yet again something different, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, and it's just so amazing that, you know, these, you know, that they, I mean, it's really clear that they were put in jail because they wanted to put them in jail, not because they committed these crimes mm-hmm. that they were alleged to have committed. I mean, you know, there was so much, you know, evidence against, you know, that would show otherwise for all of these cases,
mm-hmm.
you know. So,
right.
I don't know so much. I haven't done a lot of research on the evidence around Leonard Peltier's case, but I know in terms of evidence around Osada's case, around Imam Jamil's case, around Sundiata Kolhe's case, Kamal Siddiqui's case, we know that there is overwhelming evidence that they didn't do those crimes. And Mumia Abu-Jamal, mm-hmm. you know.
His case in Philadelphia, yeah. Right.
We know that part of the system, part of, you know, what we have to deal with is.
And that's why I said earlier that, you know, this system is so corrupt, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that even if a situation that happens with us is fires, the facts point out that it's ironclad, it is still a situation where you look at what this system has done, you know, with a jaundiced eye, with the side eye, because knowing how they are and knowing what they're able to do and knowing what they will do if they want your ass imprisoned or if they want you, you know, cut off or if you are somebody from outside of this country to be exiled or to be, you know, sent back or whatever. It's just how they operate. And,
right.
And then
still, you know, you got the whole thing like, okay, they're put in jail and they're given these life sentences plus 30 years or death penalty sentences. And you know, so many people get exonerated and let out and stuff. And, you know, and
all the time.
These people serve, some of them serve, you know, 30, 40, 50 years in jail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pardons were denied. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about like Veronica Bowers when I heard that he was granted release. And he's packed up and family's waiting for him. And he starts walking out and they just said, nope, we're just going to hold you. And he ended up staying in jail another 10 more years or so.
Damn.
And I think Mutulu Shakur, not as long, but they, the same thing. He had a release date and he was supposed to be released. And then they just said, nope. And just kept him another couple of years. Mm-hmm.
I always say they do whatever the hell they want to do. And,
right.
and it's really no justice in them. There's no honesty. There's no truth. There's no integrity in them. It is not who they are. And as the saying goes, you know, you can tell them by their works and what they continue to do, you know. And so that's what we must deal with. That's why, to me, we definitely need to come together. We need to close ranks, pull resources, and get up out of this madness, because we are appealing to a people who are not moral, who have no integrity, have no honesty, you know, who are a bunch of liars. And the prime example is what is in the White House today. This is the most lying son of a bitch on the planet. You know, this cat can't open his stanky ass mouth without lying. You know?
Yeah.
And how these Caucasians, knowing this man is lying, but believing him and support him anyways. And then now you have another liar, Elon Musk, who bankrolled him to the tune of a quarter of a billion dollars. That's why Trump, who's ignorant, who's an idiot, you know, because he don't read, is allowing this man to do what he's doing. Yeah. You know. So we got some terrible, as the saying goes, we got some terrible days ahead. Let me catch my sister here. Good afternoon, Sister Haiba. Sister Haiba?
I'm on the land.
Free the land. We got Brother Jamoke.
Yeah, I heard. Free the land, Brother Jamoke and Baba Oshi.
Yes.
And just BJ Vahodi and really enjoying the presentation today. And I joined the war cry reparations now. And appreciate all your good work and the information that you're sending us to today.
Ashe, good.
Thank you.
Ashe. Mm-hmm. I sent my donation in too. Yes, I just sent you Dr. Bokey. I was late, just did it a little while ago. Okay, yeah, it's okay. Great. Thank you.
All right, my sister. Beautiful. All right, sister.
Yeah.
All right. Peace.
By any means.
Well, the show's winding down. But once again, if anybody wants to jump in, you know, hit star twice and let you in. But I'm going to, because we only have about a few minutes more to the close of the program. Brother Jamoke, got any closing remarks, my friend, my brother?
Well, one thing I know you had mentioned leaving here and repatriation several times. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is the idea of organizing colleges and universities in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, organize if we leave here and we organize around, say, a college and university, that's like a town basically, right?
Sure.
You know, I remember visiting my cousin and we were taking his daughter to school, and I was looking around. I was like, man, they got a water tower, they got gardens, gyms, they got the phones, they got their own police. You know, there's like they got everything that they need. You got research, you got auditoriums for performances, you got sports fields. I mean, you have a self-contained town. And I was like, this would be a good way, this is just my little thought, right? That this would be a cool way to organize, you know, repatriation would be to set up a whole town. We would have employment, we got places for people to live, we got dorms, we got research, we got, like I said, you know, gym, spa, everything that we need, meeting rooms, everything we need to be, you know, like I said, our own, you know, whatever we would have. So yeah, that's just a little thought I've been having.
In my mindset, Brother Jamoke, in my mindset, in terms of preparedness, I don't mention religious institutions, okay? Mm-hmm. I only mention, you know, schools, educational institutions that will not just teach you the sciences, but also teach you agriculture, teach you management, and so forth.
Right.
You know, and you know, hospitals, the things that we so desperately need. The structure would be to develop all kind of good commercial things for us, supermarkets, you know, stores and so forth, retail. You know, mechanical. So, I mean, all these things. And the thing on that, Brother Jamoke, is this: we do have all that we need. The American African, and that has been mentioned by a lot of Pan Africanists. The American Africans, some of the most technologically advanced Africans, but also the most messed up mentally Africans. You know, who menticide has truly messed up our minds. But if we can reclaim and recapture and restore our mind, and ourselves and who we are, we can step back on the stage of human history as free and proud and productive people. There's no doubt about it. We could do it, you know. But you know, the question becomes, Brother Jamoke, do we have the will to do it?
Right.
You know, do we have the will to do it? Yeah. Well, my brother. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Brother Oshie, for this, giving me this opportunity to share. Again, if people want to come to Selma, we encourage you to consider coming on this coming weekend, Saturday, March the 8th, Sunday, March the 9th, for the Hall of Resistance, which is Saturday on March the 8th at 4 p.m. And you can go to SelmaJubilee.com to find out all the information for the paid events. Most of the events are free, but and you'll find out the schedule and everything is there. Also, I didn't mention that, you know, there is a they recreate the walk every 5 years. So this is a, you know, 6 years. This is a 5 year. So
okay,
there will be a group of people who will be walking or reenacting the walk from Selma all the way to Montgomery this year, ending up in Montgomery on Friday, March the 14th. Wow. That will be happening.
Okay. Okay.
And and again, in terms of reparations movement, I encourage my Atlanta people and wherever you are, because reparations is happening locally in most of the major cities now in the United States. And if it's not, you can get it going in your city, particularly if you're in the South. Give me a call. Let's see how we can get it going. But there are reparations task force and commissions being set up in cities and states all around the country now. And so we encourage people to get on board on that movement. All the stuff, people, I'm an activist, so I got to get people to call to action.
That's right.
That's where I go. And get in touch with me directly at reparations, the letter J, reparationsj at gmail.com, reparationsj at gmail.com. You can check out, again, the podcast, Reparations Now podcast on YouTube. And, again, just thank you, brother, for this opportunity, and the work continues. Aluta continua.
All right, my brother. Right on. That was something I wanted to ask you. I lost my train of thought, but I appreciate that, and look forward to when I get a chance to see you when I do, my brother. Okay. Oh yeah.
All right.
The booklet. How much is it? How much is it going to be?
That's a good question. I was thinking about asking for a $20 donation for it.
Okay. Well, listen. I'll do that, and I'll send you my information to mail it to me, okay? Because I definitely would like to get it. All right, Brother Jamoke. Take care, dear brother.
Yes,
peace to you.
All right, family.
All right, family. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. I'll see you on Wednesday. Oh, I haven't told you about the other folks who's going to be on the program since I got a minute. Yeah. This Friday, the brother with all that math, Brother Akil Park out of Philadelphia, will be my guest this Friday. And then next week, Monday, we'll have Brother Ayo Kamathi, the irritated genie, will be the guest next Monday. So we got a lot of good stuff coming your way. So thanks a lot, family. Have a blessed day. Peace to you.
Great show, Baba Oshie.
All right. Thank you, my brother.
Yeah,
right on.
I need...